You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Back, everybody. That's just some old guy sitting in his garage playing his guitar, and it just I love that stuff. It puts your mind at ease. Love listening to stuff like that in the background while I'm working.
Some guy from an old garage band, probably.
Maybe so. But we're working tonight, are we not? This third day of June, year of our Lord 2023, and that first hour revisiting that Buchanan interview, it got Pat back on my mind, and we dug deep throughout the week, and we uncovered some of his most incredible quotes.
Bon mots.
All the way back from the 70s through the current day. And here was something that one of his detractors wrote about Pat Buchanan. This was a Washington journalist who was very much opposed to Buchanan's rise in the 90s.
You repeat yourself. He's a Washington journalist. Of course he was opposed to him.
But this is what he wrote about him in a rare moment of honesty. He wrote, and I quote, "Pat Buchanan is so good at torching opponents because of his wit. He wins audiences because he amuses and entertains while he shocks. Richard Nixon once observed that Buchanan was the only extremist he knew with a sense of humor." And there are plenty of Washington liberals who would vote for Buchanan as their favorite dinner companion. "His stunning ability to paint vivid word pictures gives Buchanan supremacy over his more pedestrian political foes. While stumbling public speakers like Bob Dole struggle with prepared texts, Buchanan tosses off captivating phrases and inevitably help him define the political debate and agenda. But above all, Buchanan owes his political staying power to an unerring sense of what is both what is bothering Americans and his joyful enthusiasm for cutting to the quick of it." And I think you would agree with that, anybody who's ever had the honor of listening to him speak or hearing him speak. And, you know, that book that we revisited, that interview we revisited where he was promoting his book, Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War, was only one of a few books he came on this show to promote. And one of them was Suicide of a Superpower. And this
That's
is him.
That's a follow-up to Death of the West that he was talking about in that interview.
That's right. And he really touches a lot on race in Suicide of a Superpower. And when I interviewed him about that book, which we have played more often than the one you just heard, we have replayed more often than the one you just heard. We've shared it around and things like that. We really got into the racial question. And around the same time he appeared on TPC to promote that book, he appeared on CNN, and I'm going to play a two-minute clip of Pat talking about Suicide of a Superpower on CNN.
I do believe this. We're going to have the American unipolar world where we're the single last superpower. That is definitely over. I think China is an emerging superpower by 2020, economically and militarily. It'll be the dominant power in Asia. And I think an emerging superpower. Look, if they just...
But we're not dead by 2025,
well,
then,
the
right?
United States
I was worried.
Be, 2025, what concerns me is what's happening here at home, that we seem to be disintegrating as one nation, under God, indivisible. All those things we had, it seems to me we're losing. We are very much at war with each other. Mm-hmm. And it's over ideology, politics, religion, philosophy, everything. And the terms we're using on each other, I mean, the term, I mean, I'm on cable as you are. Mm-hmm. And every day somebody's calling somebody else a racist. We didn't use those kinds of terms on each other's, even during the civil rights era.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. But your book has a chapter called The End of White America.
Right.
Which... It's a startling term, and I'm curious what you mean, because isn't the end of white America, as we see the rise of Hispanics, a good thing? proof that America is a melting pot, that anybody can succeed here, no matter the color of your skin or your religion or whatever.
Well, I'm a little concerned when people say, Pat, the majority of people looking like you, that's coming to an end, Pat. So let me say this. What's wrong with this is the idea that when whites are a minority in this country in 2041 and Hispanics are 150 million, what is going to hold us together when we don't have a common religion? We don't have common beliefs about right and wrong and morality as we used to. We are at war over whether or not equality means equality of rights or equality of rewards.
The American dream, the freedom, the belief, what caused the Arab Spring, that's what holds us together.
Do people, freedom and the idea of socialist equality and freedom are in mortal conflict.
That's some good stuff right there.
Yeah, he knows. I mean, he
and she said, isn't it a great thing when whites won't be around anymore? And he said, I don't think so.
No,
see, and it bothers me when people say that guys that look like me aren't going to be around anymore. Yeah. Nobody wants to be extinct. Nobody wants to be disenfranchised.
Well, see, the normal guy, so-called normie conservative.
Oh, they'd say, yeah, that's great.
Well, he would have hemmed and hawed about it the very most, but Pat Buchanan, he hits the nail on the head and drives it straight. He just says, heck no, that's not going to be a good thing. It's going to be a horrible thing. And America, as we know it, will be gone, and what will replace it is going to be vastly inferior to what we had before.
Yeah, well, there you have it. And that was, you won't have anybody. Donald Trump, who said so much we like, he defended the Confederate bases that are now being renamed and all of that, but he never said anything as status. That was just a giveaway comment. She said, isn't it going to be great? He said, well, people tell me it's going to be great, but I'm not so sure about that.
Well, look, the thing about Trump is he did cave in on so many things. If you don't believe me, check Ann Coulter's most recent article, or maybe the second most recent article. I mean, Ann Coulter, again, hits the nail on the head and drives it straight on this. We need to remember that we had two great ideological giants pass. The first one was Sam Francis in 2005, and now Pat is no longer writing articles, which seems to indicate to us that he may have had.
Well, I mean, look, he's 84 years. I don't know about that, but he's 84 years old, and he's retired.
He and Sam Francis were the two bell cows of the movement. Now, Ann is great. Ann has a rapier wit, more so than
nobody. There's
else.
Only one Pat Buchanan,
but
and
there's
nobody.
Only one Pat
there's
Buchanan.
Nobody even in his league. There is him. There is he, and then there are all the people that are underneath him at some other tier. He populates that tier alone.
Yeah, he is alone at the top of Olympus.
That's right. Well, and we had the chance to be able to talk to him and to be able to, I got my start. I mean, people have heard my story about how I first met him at the Hermitage and how I got invited along with him, just him and the curator, and a state trooper.
He's the one that inspired both you and me to get involved. Let's just face it. That's what it comes down to. He was an inspiration to us and so many others.
Well, a lot of people say he's the gateway, but I had the opportunity to be on that 2000 campaign in a very minuscule, well, I say, we'll talk about that a little bit later. the 2000 Buchanan campaign for president and that final run for the White House under the Reform Party, there are a lot of things I think people forget about that run, but I'll set you straight on it because I was there as a delegate for Buchanan and as a national committee man for the Reform Party and as the state treasurer for his Tennessee campaign. We'll be right back.
Hey there, TPC family. This is James Edwards, your host of The Political Cesspool. Folks, I want you to subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper. Against all odds, AFP has and continues to publish a populist, independent print newspaper with an unparalleled track record. Founded by a dedicated group of experienced patriots, AFP pulls no punches and tackles the most controversial and pressing issues facing America from an America First perspective. I've worked with the American Free Press since even before the beginning of TPC. Now that's something. You can subscribe to the print edition by visiting AmericanFreePress.net today, or simply pick up a handy digital edition subscription. However you do it, subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, by visiting AmericanFreePress.net or by calling 1-888-699-NEWS, AmericanFreePress.net.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Well, if we've been able to stay on the Pat Buchanan bandwagon this long, let's do a little bit more. We did a deep dive, and we uncovered a lot of some of the greatest quotes ever given by Pat Buchanan, and I'm just going to share a few of them now, and I'll give you the citation and where we pulled them from, and Keith, you can comment, make a quick comment after every two or three we reel off, and we'll just have a little fun with it here. So here it is, him, when he was running in 1996, which was his high water mark in terms of being a threat to the establishment. He was obviously the second biggest. He came in second in the Republican primaries to Bob Dole. He won several states, and besides Bob Dole and Bill Clinton, he was the one. He was
what
the last
a,
one.
What
standing.
A loser Bob Dole is! All people remember him for Dare Viagra commercials.
Well, here we go. So he's rising in power in February of 1996. He's on CBS News's Face the Nation, and he says, "Stop calling me names. Stop the invective. You know those people up here having a hissy fit all over Washington? They can't control themselves. I'm asking the people in the Republican Party, take a couple of Prozac, fellows. Calm down." And that's the wit that we're talking about here. But here's another one, and talking about his being controversial. This is from the New York Times in 1986. "What kind of a commentator or critic would you be if you weren't controversial? So I'm rather proud that I'm controversial. People who have been in government or politics or commentary for 10 years and are totally non-controversial haven't said anything or done anything worth paying much attention to. I'm a man of controversy, and I enjoy every bit of it."
Well, he's absolutely right. Let's draw the analogy to a preacher. Do you want a preacher that puts you to sleep when he makes a sermon, or do you want someone that awakens you and gives you insights and makes you aware of God's word? That's what, you know, his Prozac comment, for example, was right on. You know, the deep state just goes hysterical when an intelligent, articulate person like Pat Buchanan comes out. Appears on the world to challenge them.
Because he's charming and he draws affection and devotion from the people who support him. And there you have it. So here's another one. You talked about God and godlessness. This is him on an interview with David Brinkley on ABC News' This Week, February 18th, 1996. He's debating Sam Donaldson. "Listen, Sam, you may believe you're descended from monkeys. I don't believe it. I think you're a creature of God. I believe that God created heaven and earth. Parents have a right to insist that godless evolution not be taught to their children." And again, that's almost a bridge too far for a lot of conservatives nowadays. Here's one. You want to know this?
He brought out the fact that something that we take for granted like that is controversial in the eyes of the people that are in charge of our nation.
Here's another one. The Confederate battle flag. Where does Pat stand on that? You should probably know. This comes from a Republican presidential candidates debate in Columbia, South Carolina, February 29, 1996. "That Confederate battle flag," Pat said, "to me is a symbol of defiance, courage, bravery in the face of overwhelming odds, and I believe that everyone should stand up for their heritage. It didn't fly over slave quarters. It flew over battlefields like Chickamauga and Cold Harbor, Antietam and Gettysburg, and also on the Confederate battle flag. My friends, if there is room in America for songs like 'We Shall Overcome,' then there is room for Dixie as well."
Amen.
Let's see what else we've got here.
See, he would insist that we stand up for ourselves. He was not one of these so-called conservatives that wants to roll over and play dead to every complaint, carping complaint made by the left.
I'm going to fire you up here. I shouldn't encourage you, but I'm about to. This first one, though, is on homosexuality. Pat Buchanan on in his autobiography right from the beginning. Someone's values are going to prevail. Why not ours? Whose country is it anyway? Whose moral code says we may interfere with a man's right to be a practicing bigot, but we must respect and protect his right to be a practicing sodomite? Now, here's where I'm going to encourage you, and I know better, but I'm going to read it anyway. This is from the McNeil Lehrer News Hour, December 13th, 1991. The Congress of the United States is Israeli-occupied territory. What I mean by that is that the most powerful lobby in Washington, which Congress can't stand up to, one of the most powerful, is certainly the pro-Israeli lobby. It has gotten its way in this town year in and year out.
Well, that really does sandpaper Wildcat's ass because, like I said, when you hit the nail on the head, you drive it straight. Can you imagine anyone being that plain-spoken and that accurate about the Jewish question that is on the public stage?
Well, he was
today
the biggest commentator for the paleoconservative movement. I mean, you're talking about, I'm reading some of these, and I'm reading these word for word, Republican presidential debates, Face the Nation. You're talking
about...
Can
you imagine anybody that would be up there on the Republican stage for these, this coming election, saying anything that provides,
well, listen to this,
that direct and that truthful.
Well, in his syndicated column on September the 21st, 1990, he had been labeled an anti-Semite by New York Times columnist Abe Rosenthal. Now,
I wonder what Abe Rosenthal's
than running from it or apologizing or doing the white wimp shuffle as so many conservatives would do, he simply said, "Well, there goes the B'nai B'rith Man of the Year Award."
Well, see, that's exactly why we need to have somebody like Pat Buchanan. Can you imagine that cuck Donald Trump or that cuck Ron DeSantis or that cuck Nikki Haley?
We're never
going to
get
Tim
through
Scott,
this.
Saying anything like that, they would all just bend over and
here's another one.
Kiss the genuflect to Jewish power and influence.
So on PBS, talking with David Frost in 1992. This is another direct quote from Pat Buchanan. Anti-Semitic is a term used by a very powerful special interest in America to demonize and destroy the reputation of men who stand up and disagree with their agenda. Now, Pat Buchanan disagrees with the agenda of the Israeli lobby.
Well, God bless him for it. I wish that Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis or any of them, there's not one that you cannot find a picture of them with a yarmulke on their head and a shawl around their shoulder, kissing the Wailing Wall.
Now, here's another one. This one's actually on feminism. We're going through a lot of topics. This was in an op-ed for the Houston Chronicle in October of 1991. He's talking about feminism. Feminists insist that 25-year-old women are capable as men of flying combat missions. They can handle the terror of battle, but need federal protection against office pigs and fanny patters.
Well, you know what? It's like
humor again.
I heard something recently that is like it, about some 80-year-old that was being in a confrontation, a conflag with some Antifa people. And he said that his generation was much greater than theirs. I said, why? He said, well, when I was a child, we had Wonder Woman. Today, you have to wonder if it's a woman.
That's a good one, Keith. Here's a White House memo from August of 1971. It seems to me, he writes, that a lot of what we are doing in terms of integration of blacks and whites is less likely to result in accommodation than it is in perpetual friction.
Well, again, he was like Nostradamus. He saw the future.
That was 1971.
Yeah, he saw what the future held for us. He tried to warn us. He knew what the end game was going to be.
Here's another one on racial issues from his syndicated column in April of 1994. Here in Washington, D.C., despite a generous welfare system, its beneficiaries are resentful. Here, though almost all positions of power are held by minorities, mayor, city council, school board, police, and fire department, and preferential treatment is routine in hiring, still, talk radio and the press are filled with venomous tirades about white racism.
Well, that's why state government needs to revoke the charters of these black-run cities, tell them you've proven yourselves incapable of running the government, You're all fired. The charter is gone. The city of whatever it is doesn't exist anymore. And we're going to run your city out of the state capitol.
Here's an op-ed in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, July 12, 1993. Quote, "Let us hope," Buchanan writes, "that the L.A. riot where aliens joined homegrown thugs to maim, loot, and lynch is not America's future." Fast forward to George Floyd.
Again, Nostradamus, Buchanan spoke again.
All right. On Martin Luther King. This is on CNN's Crossfire, November 12, 1990. Pat Buchanan said, "If the man has character flaws that would have gotten him kicked out of presidential races, why should you ask American kids to hold him up as a role model, and why should the rest of us be required to set aside a day to honor him?"
Well, that all of that stuff is supposed to come out, I think, in 2027. Look, J. Edgar Hoover, head of the FBI back then, knew exactly what a reprobate and a pig he was. And when that information comes out, I guarantee it will either be covered up and smothered, or it's going to just cause a nuclear blast, basically, figuratively speaking, in American society.
So when he was running for president in 1996, that was the time he was the biggest threat to the system. A group of protesters came to mock him and accused him of being a racist and an anti-Semite at a Lexington, Massachusetts campaign rally, March the 2nd, 1996. Pat responded, "What we have here is the revolt of the overprivileged. Quiet down, children, or I'll take away your grants."
Oh, boy. I mean, does he... He just cuts right to the chase on everything. He knows exactly what he's dealing with these people. It's just a shame that his brand of common sense did not prevail. We would have such a much better and far superior nation if it had.
All right. We'll come back with some more great quotes from the great, the one and only Pat Buchanan, from his vast, vast career of influence people.
Vast reservoir of intelligence and wit.
Stay tuned, folks. If you're having fun, we'll keep the party going.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News. I'm Jerry Varmash. President Biden signed the debt ceiling bill into law on Saturday afternoon. In a Friday evening televised speech, Biden called it good news for America. He also praised House Speaker Kevin McCarthy for his efforts in reaching the bipartisan agreement that passed through Congress. The sweeping measure raises the federal debt limit ahead of the June 5th deadline and keeps the USA from defaulting on its debt. Former President Trump says he's, quote, at least as innocent as his vice president after Mike Pence was cleared of all charges related to classified documents at his home. The Justice Department said Friday it wouldn't bring charges against the former vice president, and Trump wrote on Truth Social that he should be fully exonerated on what he called a hoax. Federal agents raided Trump's Mar-a-Lago home last year after his refusal to turn classified documents over. Officials in India are calling off a search and rescue effort after one of the worst rail disasters in the country's history. Nearly 300 people were killed and hundreds more injured when two passenger trains derailed, trapping victims under wrecked rail cars and mangled coaches in eastern India. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin is clarifying the U.S. position when it comes to China throwing its weight around in the Indo-Pacific region.
To be clear, we do not seek conflict or confrontation, but we will not flinch in the face of bullying or coercion.
Speaking at a major Asian security conference in Singapore, Austin said the U.S. would prefer dialogue over conflict. Another state takes action on gender-affirming care for minors.
Texas becomes the 19th state to do so after Governor Greg Abbott signed a bill into law Friday. It takes effect in September, banning health care providers from prescribing hormones or puberty blockers to minors and from performing surgeries that help with gender transition. There are exceptions for those already in the process or who have been through mental health counseling. I'm Jeremy Scott.
This is USA News.
Omaha Steaks is rewriting the book on burgers with an all-new handmade texture for the juiciest home-style burgers you've ever tasted. Their pure ground burgers are made from single cuts of real aged Omaha steaks. These are truly steaks on a bun. Filet mignon, ribeye, New York strip, sirloin, and even brisket burgers. Now is the time to experience the exclusive Burger Perfection Flight for just $79.99. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code TREAT at checkout to get an extra $20 off your order, plus free shipping. You'll get four of each pure ground burger so you can sample all the steak on a bun greatness. These burgers are crafted for a juicier, more tender experience, making your mouth water with every single bite. Don't wait. Go to omahasteaks.com. Use promo code TREAT at checkout and get $20 off the Burger Perfection Flight and discover your new burger obsession. Minimum order may be required.
Just having a little fun tonight, revisiting some of these old quotes. Buchanan was on our mind in light of the anniversary of D-Day, so we revisited that interview
George
in the first
hour.
George
is on some people's mind, but Buchanan is on ours.
And then I was thinking, you know, this guy's career, people need to remember it. And he's 84 years old. He's getting a little older. We all are.
His wit was incomparable.
But this is, so we're just honoring the man because we want to and because we can. And if not us, who will? But on immigration, ABC News is This Week with David Brinkley, December the 8th, 1991. Pat said, and I quote, "I think God made all people good, but if we had to take a million immigrants, say Zulus next year, or Englishmen, and put them in Virginia, what group would be easier to assimilate and what group would cause less problems for the people of Virginia?" Now, that's supposed to be like some sort of a...
Well, look, that's the unspeakable truth. See, that's you know, it's like the... Emperor's like the child that told the emperor he had no clothes. That's the role that Pat Buchanan played so often in American society.
And here's another one, a campaign rally in Waterloo, Iowa, January 1996. I'm going to build that fence and we'll close it and we'll say, "Listen, Jose, you're not coming in this time." That's the kind of stuff that could whip up a crowd. And he said in an Esquire magazine, I believe it was Esquire magazine, but certainly in an interview after Trump was elected president, they asked him about his influence on Trump or the influence of his ideas on Trump, because Trump championed so many of the same ideas. He said, "The ideas made it even if I didn't," and that was a classy answer. CNN's Crossfire, September the 13th, 1991. Should we be concerned that Americans of European descent will be a minority? I want to save and preserve the country I grew up in. I'll be honest, I don't want to live in the Brazil of North America.
I tell you what, that type of honesty and that type of courage is so rare today. But see, remember, he comes from a world like the late 50s where the president of the United States, Dwight Eisenhower, had Operation Wetback, where he just rounded up all of the foreign illegals and shipped them out.
On David Duke, quote about David Duke from Pat Buchanan. This is in a Houston Chronicle op-ed, October 24th, 1991. This was when Duke was running for governor and at the height of his political power. Pat Buchanan wrote, "Take a hard look at David Duke's portfolio of winning issues. Those are not in conflict with GOP principles. Duke's message comes across as middle class, merit-based, populist, and nationalist."
Well, again, he knew who to support. I guarantee you Pat Buchanan saw in David Duke a fellow traveler, somebody that was like him, thought like him, and had the best interests of the white American population at heart.
On the media, syndicated column from June of 1989, quote, "If the sexual revolution has been a medical disaster, socially it has been a catastrophe. Why did the media not report and explore the tragic results of the sexual revolution? Because many are collaborators." And of course, in 1991, you could have never, or excuse me, 1989, you could have never foreseen this transgender stuff.
Well, one thing that all left-wing movements have in common is reduction of white birth rates. And the feminist movement, the civil rights movement, the homosexual rights movement, the no-fault divorce initiative, all of them have had that effect. And I don't think it's an accident. I don't think it's coincidence. I think it's what the left has planned. They basically are intentionally sabotaging the prospects of America by trying to reduce the number of white people in America.
Here's a quote on guns from Crossfire, December 19th, 1990. Isn't the problem rather than dangerous guns really lousy people? I mean, we have much easier gun laws in Virginia, and we don't have anything like the massacres or murders that you're conducting here in Washington, D.C.
Amen. Okay. When you hit the nail on the head, you drive it straight.
Now, the ADL has compiled a list of Buchanan quotes as well. And so we'll give the ADL attribution for these gems. And here's what the ADL has compiled in his own words, Pat Buchanan. If Elena Kagan is confirmed, Jews who represent less than 2% of the U.S. population will have 33% of the Supreme Court seats. Is this Democrats' idea of diversity? Another, Israel and its fifth column in this city seek to stampede us into war with Iran. Bush should rebuff them, and the American people should tell their congressmen, if you vote for them, we don't vote for you. If you want to know, another quote from the ADL, if you want to know ethnicity and power in the United States, 13 members of the Senate are Jewish folks who are 2% of the population. That's where the real power is at. Another, after World War II, Jewish influence over foreign policy became almost an obsession with American leaders. Another, I know the power of the Israeli lobby and the other lobbies, but we need a foreign policy that puts our country first. Another, Capitol Hill is Israeli-occupied territory. And then, when asked by Katie Couric on the Today Show why he faces accusations of anti-Semitism, he responded, quote, because I speak truth to power and because I'm the only leader in this country who will stand up to the Israeli lobby.
He's the only man with the guts to do the job.
On other issues, this is on segregation and affirmative action, Buchanan is quoted as saying. By the ADL, of course, so we'll take them at their word. They'd never lie about anybody, but
no.
I believe these are accurate quotes here. If the GOP wants to represent Middle America, it must address the concerns of Middle America. Among these is the deeply ingrained leftist and anti-Christian bias on elite campuses that are the breeding stables of America's future leaders. Another, if proportional representation is the name of the game, Christian and European Americans should get into the game and demand their fair share of the pie, 75% and no less.
Again, you know, if they want real diversity, that's the diversity they would get. Instead, they want to make sure that under the groups like blacks that are 13% and Jews that are 2%, that 15% controls everything, has more than 50% of the seats at the table.
And he said this in the interview that we just played here on TPC it was the interview that he gave to CNN that even in the 50s and 60s, people weren't calling each other racist and white supremacists. And he writes this in right from the beginning, quote, in the late 40s and 50s, race was never a preoccupation with us. We rarely thought about it. There were no politics to polarize us then, to magnify every slight. The Negroes of Washington had their public schools, restaurants, bars, movie houses, playgrounds, and churches, and we had ours.
Look, segregation was natural and normal. It takes somebody with a lot of courage to say it. Pat Buchanan would say it. Look, racism and transgenderism all had the same godfather, the same grandfather. It was Magnus Hirschfeld, a Jewish, atheist, pedophile, homosexual, who was the father of transgenderism and also was the father of the civil rights movement. He wrote a book in 1935 entitled Racism, the first documented use of the term racism. He's the inventor of the term racism, and racism and transgenderism are thereby connected.
He had a couple of books, Day of Reckoning and State of Emergency, Death of the West, Suicide of the Superpower, that really touches on the issue of race, immigration, and ethnicity. Here's a few quotes from those books. How is America, this is from Day of Reckoning, how is America committing suicide in every way that a nation can? The American majority is not reproducing itself. Its birth rate has been below replacement level for decades.
And why is that? It's because they no longer have prospects for the children that they had come to expect and know, and were based not on racial preferences, but on meritocracy. Meritocracy has been tossed out the window by our deep state people, and we're supposed to be okay with it? No way.
From State of Emergency, which he appeared on this program to promote as well. If racism means a belief in the superiority of the white race and its inherent right to rule over other peoples, American history is full of such men. Indeed, few great men could be found in America or Europe before World War II who did not accept white supremacy as natural. Another quote from State of Emergency. But when it comes to the ability to assimilate into a nation like the United States, all nationalities, creeds, and cultures.
TPC family, it's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
In message one, we said that Satan, the father of lies, John 8:44, gave the left evil, spiritual power the more they used the lies. The political left today is the beast. Now the Bible confirms that the dragon gave him, the beast, his power. Revelation 13:2. The extra evil spiritual power that comes from the beast by their lying is what accounts for the string of the leftist criminals in the government that have never yet been prosecuted. It also explains why American capitalists support communism in the 21st century. Note 1. That behavior of capitalists was predicted by Vladimir Lenin, a cell of the beast. Note 2. Henry Ford was a capitalist, and he would have never gone communist. The difference between Ford and the present-day, end-time capitalists, is that Ford was born and educated in the Kingdom of Christ, 19th century America, the New Jerusalem, Revelation 21.
All right, well, it looks like we had a little power outage here with storm rolling through, apparently, and so we apologize for that, folks, there, those last that last minute or two before the last break. We're reading through these Buchanan quotes. I'll read just a couple of more. I'll reread them in case you didn't hear them while we were attempting to get reconnected with the network there. But a couple of quotes here from State of Emergency, another book he appeared on the program to promote. How is America committing suicide in every way a nation can? The American majority is not reproducing itself. Its birth rate has been below replacement level for decades. Another, if racism means a belief in the superiority of the white race and is inherent to the right to rule other people, then American history is full of such men. Indeed, few great men could be found in America or Europe before World War II who did not accept white supremacy as natural, also in state of emergency. When it comes to the ability to assimilate into a nation like the United States, all nationalities, creeds, and cultures are not equal. To say that they are, ideologically speaking, is not judgment born of experience. Another quote from the same book, should America lose her ethnic cultural core and become a nation of nations, America will not survive. Another, it is not true that all creeds and cultures are equally assimilable in a first world nation born of England, Christianity, and Western civilization. Race, faith, ethnicity, and history leave genetic fingerprints that no proposition nation can erase. Race matters, ethnicity matters, and history matters. And we could go on and on and on from there. Things like that, things that no other presidential contender would have said. And now you've got people like Ted Cruz lamenting the fact that Uganda passed anti-homosexual laws. I mean, that's supposed to be the conservative champion. That's supposed to be the guy that can, instead of a guy like Pat Buchanan, that's going to be the kind of guys that they are fashioning as hardcore conservatives. A guy who said, what did Ted Cruz say? That it was horrific and wrong that Uganda has passed legislation criminalizing homosexuality, which all Western nations did up until the last few decades. He wrote that it is horrific and wrong, and all civilized nations should join together in condemning this human rights abuse. That's not a guy. I can't win with losers like that. And losers like Mike Pence and Chris Christie, who have entered the Republican race now, you're not going to go anywhere with people like that. These guys are phonies. Pat Buchanan was a genuine article. And I had the chance, as you know, to be a volunteer on that campaign in 2000, that final presidential campaign. We're all getting older. Pat Buchanan's 84 years old now. And I remember I told you how I met him, and I signed up for the campaign, and I wanted to volunteer. And I got a call from the state party in Tennessee. And they said, do you want to host a meeting where we'll come down? And we was the vice chairman and the secretary of the state party for the Buchanan campaign. And we'll do a little recruiting mission, and we'll get some volunteers, and we'll do some ballot access, some signatures for ballot access. And I said, I'd love to do that if that's what you need me to do. We put together a meeting. They drove down from Nashville, the state party leaders for the Buchanan campaign. And I put together this meeting. This was my first time to ever do anything in terms of public organizing and public speaking. And we had about 75 people who turned out, and they got there. And I said, I'm sorry, guys. I could only pull 75 people. And it looks like we're only going to have 75 people here. And they said, what are you talking about? That's the biggest meeting we've had in, so far in the campaign at any part of the state. This was in very early 2000. And they said, you know, by the way, the campaign needs a state treasurer. I'm 19 years old and the treasurer of this, of the campaign in the state of Tennessee. And I continued to sort of prove myself and do the best I could at any task, no matter how menial was given to me. And they said, do you want to be the delegate for the 7th Congressional District? You want to go out to California and be a delegate that nominates Pat for the presidential nomination of the Reform Party? I do want to do that. And so I got in that position. And then a little later on, by the summer of 2000, they asked me if I wanted to be one of three national committee members of the Reform Party out of Tennessee. And so there I was in the summer of 2000, the treasurer of the campaign in Tennessee, a delegate and a national committeeman. And people say, well, you know, that's not that big of a deal, right? Because, I mean, you know, you have all these third parties and they never amount to much and they never make much noise. And but the Reform Party was a little different. What you'll forget about that, I think we're able – no, never mind. I was talking with our studio. I thought we were able to reconnect there, but apparently not. I'm getting a ton of text messages, and I don't know what's going on. But the Reform Party was different in that year for a couple of reasons. When Pat Buchanan first announced he was moving to the Reform Party in late 1999, we've got to remember, in 1996, Buchanan was a huge threat. So we thought that would parlay into his 2000 campaign. And the Reform Party was different than Constitution Party, who always run presidential candidates, but they never really make any noise. The Reform Party was different because Ross Perot, who founded the Reform Party, had been allowed into the presidential debates. Ross Perot debated against George Bush and Bill Clinton. Now, that's huge. If Pat Buchanan had gotten into the debates, that could have really, really, really made some waves. And we thought that he would be able to because Perot had been able to. And we thought that he would be able to get into those debates also because the Reform Party, because of Perot's showing in 1996, was the only party besides the Republicans and the Democrats to receive federal funding for its presidential candidate. It got millions of dollars in taxpayer funding that really set it apart from the other third parties. And, of course, Ross Perot's showing in 92. In 96, but especially in 92, that gave us hope that Buchanan would be able to come in, also get into the debates, and with the federal funding, be able to make some real noise. But in any event, they denied him access to the debates. They changed the rules on what you had to do to qualify the debates once the candidate became Pat Buchanan. But it was a wonderful year. And by the end of the campaign, I was actually doing some press. I was given some interviews, some small local interviews in newspapers and even on television as a spokesman for the campaign. So that was the year from January when I first met Buchanan and signed up to be a volunteer all the way to the end. We had a lot of different roles there. And there would be no TPC without PJB. That's just all there is to it. And it was a wonderful experience. I can still name all of the members of the board of directors. John was the chairman. I'm not going to give you his last name, but he's still alive. J.D. Jones was the vice chairman. Pete Baramski was the secretary. They've been called home. I was treasurer. I can tell you the names of every district delegate from the congressional districts here. I can remember going out and getting Pat on the ballot in this state. And it was a wonderful year. And it was a big-time campaign. We were out in Long Beach, California for that Reform Party convention. The campaign rented out the entire aquarium of the Pacific, one of the world-class aquariums in the United States there in Long Beach, and also rented out the Queen Mary, the cruise ship for a gala. And I was around the key players enough to see how they interacted with other people. I am telling you, Pat Buchanan is a class act, the real deal. Had an opportunity to have the campaign down at my parents' home. They asked me in the fall of 2000 if I could put on a fundraiser for the campaign at my home. I said, well, I was 19 when the campaign started. I turned 20 in June. By the time they asked, I'm only 20 years old. I actually am not a homeowner yet, but my parents have a house. So they came down and we did a meeting did a fundraiser there. And we did we got a high school that allowed them to come and speak. And I could tell you stories for days from that year. It was a transformative year. It was a year that certainly changed my life. And we're still talking to you now on the radio 19 years later because of that year. But we want to talk to you longer still. And while we work to reset our connection here, and before the third hour, we're going to transition. We're going to have Lacey Lynn on the show. She's going to be talking about a Guardian article that attacks traditional femininity and wives and families. But I do want to remind you that our second quarter fundraising drive just kicked off. It just kicked off on June the 1st. If you are an established donor of TPC, you will have by now hopefully received a letter in your mailbox that tells you all the reasons why you should hopefully want to contribute to our program and why we need you and why you're so important and exactly how important you are, but also lists some of the incentives we have for you. We always try to give you thoughtful incentives, whether it's a piece of Jefferson Davis's home or an audiobook from Jared Taylor, which we're offering this year, If We Do Nothing. It's a high-quality MP3 download that's going to be electronically delivered to you if you donate at $100 or more. I think you'll enjoy that. If you donate $200 or more, you're going to get the audiobook. You're going to get the latest edition of the Occidental Quarterly, and you're also going to get a collectible Keith Alexander. He's not mic'd up right now because we're suffering through some problems, but you're also going to get a classic Buchanan for President bumper sticker that was only issued in the state of Tennessee in the year 2000. As the treasurer of the campaign here in Tennessee, I actually wrote the check to buy these bumper stickers. Now, Keith, you can very quickly describe this to – I'm going to put you on speakerphone if I can, which I can't. But anyway, nothing works. You're going to have to take off your headset. You're not going to get close enough. Explain what you've got.
I've got a Buchanan bumper sticker. It is got the state of Tennessee, and it's got Buchanan for president within the white part of it. The other part of it has two stars, one on the left-hand upper, another the three-star emblem of the state of Tennessee for the three states of Tennessee, and then orange, like the big orange, you know, the color of for the University of Tennessee sports teams.
I remember it was one of our East Tennessee delegates that asked that we should do that. We called the campaign. We got permission. We got sanctioned to do that. I cut the check for that as the treasurer. And I remembered this week I still have some of them in the attic. So I went, I got a pile of them. We're offering those and a lot of good stuff. Listen, there's actually one extra tier. There's one extra tier this time that we don't normally do. And read the letter and you'll know what it is. And it can all be yours. We're going to come back. We're going to try to get Keith mic'd up. We're going to let him talk a little bit more about this. Keith, this one's for you, brother. I am gifting Keith right now. I want to see that on your car next week. Buchanan for president.
But no one else, I would rather be supporting for president than Pat Buchanan.
We'll be back with Lacey Lynn next. Stay tuned, everybody.